Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my very special guest is Paul Blake Smith. I've had Paul on in the past to talk about the St. Gerardo crash of 1942 in Missouri, crash retrieval. I've had him on the show to talk about President Eisenhower's historic meeting with aliens at Muroc Field, now known as Edwards Air Force Base. And today, Paul Blake Smith is here to talk about his newest book about the legendary encounter that Jackie Gleason, the Great One, had alongside his friend, President Richard Milhouse Nixon, on a visit to an air base in Florida where they saw alien bodies. Other people have talked about this. Larry Warren was told personally by Jackie Gleason that this had indeed happened to him, that he had been taken to an air base. If memory serves, correct me if I'm wrong later, Paul, but I was told Homestead Air Force Base, and they were shown
Right.
these bodies of alien beings. So without any further ado, Paul, welcome back to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Well, thanks for having me on. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, I think that this subject it really needs to be brought to the forefront once again. I'm seeing these podcasters who don't know anything about the UFO subject, with every new revelation of an insider source revealing information about a secret alien UFO program, a back engineering program. You know, the eyes roll, the snickers, the same laughter curtain that used to descend back in the old days with alarming frequency for this new generation of podcasters who don't know anything about our subject. They think this subject is funny, but when we look back in our history, some of the most important presidents had firsthand information about UFOs and aliens. Truman, Eisenhower, and now you're here to tell us about President Nixon. So you have the floor, Paul. Tell us about your interest in this particular subject and how you got the ball rolling on it.
All right. A few years ago, I did a story on President Eisenhower and his trip to Edwards Air Force Base late one night during a golf vacation. And in my 2020 book that did pretty well, and you can find it on Amazon, you can see a list of 10 ways that Mr. Eisenhower set up this trip and pulled it off that correspond perfectly with what Richard Nixon did on the same exact date, 19 years later. For Eisenhower, it was February 19th, 1954. For Mr. Nixon to go to an Air Force base to attend to extraterrestrial matters, it was February 19th, 1973. And in this case, he brought along his golfing buddy, comedian Jackie Gleason. Jackie had been a friend for at least 10 years or more. I believe they first met Jackie and Nixon back in the 50s when Jackie was a big TV star for CBS and living in New York City. And Nixon lived there for a while and then became vice president under Dwight Eisenhower. And then in the early 70s, Mr. Gleason was living in Miami, and he was still golfing buddies with Richard Nixon, who came down to his Key Biscayne, Florida home. He bought it just as soon as he won the presidency in November of 68, so that it gave the two of them an excuse to get together now and then, usually outside the prying eyes of the press. The Nixon compound on Key Biscayne was on the waterfront, and there were two different guard stations for Secret Service. The military were all over. It was very well guarded. The press didn't get in there. They had to stay at bay, at bay or at arm's length in Miami, not too terribly far away, so that Nixon could really go about his business sight unseen to most of the public and would release press statements when he felt it was necessary. It's interesting to know that in biographies I read, a number of Nixon aides said, whenever we went down to Florida, we got almost no work done. Nixon would sit there and read briefing document after briefing document, almost in complete silence. And it makes you wonder what he was reading exactly, as you consider that he went in and out of Homestead Air Force Base over 50 times in his 6-year presidency. Now, remember, Nixon had a home in California, San Clemente, and he frequently went there. So what does he need Key Biscayne for at all, unless it was his excuse to go to and from Homestead Air Force Base, which is where Jackie came home one night and said he saw the most amazing things, things not from this world. So to give some examples, on February 1954, Eisenhower snuck away from his golf vacation, and the press were distracted with a party at their hotel to allow him free rein to run around at night and go to Edwards Air Force Base. I think he took a short flight from Palm Springs to Edwards. And then he met with some extraterrestrials at an Air Force Base hangar. And I believe they were also meeting, he and his staff were meeting in an office there. Eisenhower met with five landed spaceships, their craft, their crew, at the edge of a Air Force hangar at the desert base. It's vast. It's a huge place. So they were not seen by the public. And the aliens were said to have been human-like and spoke in English and expressed their desire to get Eisenhower to curtail his nuclear weapons testing. They were really worried about the way we were detonating atomic bombs in America and in the South Pacific, in particular, in the sky, in the sea, and in the land, just setting these things off like kids playing with dynamite, practically. So you could see that was a pretty good reason for aliens to land and ask, please stop doing this. You're sending pollution and radiation throughout Earth's atmosphere and into outer space. So 19 years later, Nixon became president. Eisenhower died in the first couple of months of Nixon's presidency in 69. And in fact, by February of 73, Nixon was the king of the hill. There were no living presidents whatsoever. Ex-presidents, they had all died. He was the only U.S. president. J. Edgar Hoover, head of the FBI, was dead. Alan Dulles and his top staff member, Charles Cabell at CIA, were also dead. So Nixon felt like he could do whatever he pleased. And he pretty much did. He got the reputation as King Richard of his imperial presidency, because no one was going to call him out on anything, really. In those days, he just won a massive re-election in November of 72. So by February of 73, his poll ratings were skyrocketing as the Vietnam War was being brought to a close and American citizens, or servicemen actually, were being brought home from Vietnam. So this gave him the power to do anything he wanted. And he apparently decided to take advantage of that to escort Jackie Gleason to this sensitive air base about 30 miles south of Miami, where he was vacationing, golf vacation at night, to an Air Force base and apparently to a hangar and to a kind of office or morgue or examination room, according to the story. So much of the story comes from Beverly Gleason, Jackie's wife at the time. The following year after the event, which took place February 19th, 1973, she gave a brief interview to a tabloid and mentioned this story rather briefly in 1974. Jackie was furious. The two were estranged at the time, and that was like the last straw of their marriage. Jackie called up Beverly and said, "You're never to talk about this. Keep your mouth shut. This is not for the public to know." And it hit the press, and people started asking Jackie, "What about this trip to an Air Force base you took with Nixon, according to your wife, to see extraterrestrials?" And he refused to deny it. He could have easily said, "No, this is a lot of nonsense. Don't bother me with this. Don't listen to her. It's crazy." He didn't say anything like that. He just kept his mouth shut. And that allowed the story to grow and grow. He was asked by UFO researchers, and he turned them down. He didn't want to talk about it. Another person would be Larry Bryant, a very famous and respected UFO researcher, said he tried three different times to even get Jackie to sign an affidavit or simply give an interview or fill out some questions that he mailed in. Jackie was a big UFO person, but he refused to talk about it. So Jackie and Beverly got a divorce, and in 1983, the 10-year anniversary of this event, Beverly decided, I'm going to write my own tell-all book and explain everything that Jackie did when we were married. They were now long since divorced, but she decided, I'll write an article myself for the National Enquirer. And she did, and she mentioned what happened in some detail. And again, when this hit the newsstands, Jackie exploded with anger and called her up and said, you're not to talk about this. Don't ever speak of this matter. And again, he was asked, is this story true? And he refused to deny it. He refused to comment on it at all. So 4 years later, he passed away. But I am reading that some friends of his who were not UFO people kept asking him, well, why do you keep saying for certain we're being visited by other races? And Jackie would simply tell them, Nixon showed me the proof, or Nixon showed me the evidence. And that's all he would say to his friends privately. He would say nothing to the public. So I believe that Beverly's story is true. And it checks out when I start looking through Mr. Nixon's presidential records. And I put this kind of research into my book. Mr. Nixon's records have been digitized. You can go to his presidential library and look up his schedule for almost every day. But when you get up to February 19th, 1973, as of 8:30 that night, you get a blank because it says, document was removed from this file. Gee, I wonder why. For the rest of the night, you don't know what he was up to. And it resumes the next morning when he gets up, gets dressed, meets with an aide or two, takes a call, and goes back to Homestead Air Force Base. So he left on Air Force One from that. That was a Tuesday morning when he left. It was the Monday night of February 19th that matches up so well with the Eisenhower business that I believe is not coincidental. I believe that as you read my Eisenhower Close Encounters book, you understand that there was a treaty signed between Eisenhower and these friendly human-like beings. And so it would have been on the 19th anniversary of that treaty, which might have needed updating or canceling or amending in some form. And that's why the special date, Nixon had to go to the Air Force base nearest him in Miami area. So he took Jackie with him. And I'll tell you why he allowed Jackie to go with him. It's a circumstance that all fits together too, regarding Watergate. When Nixon got reelected, there was a growing scandal that he had sent his top aides to break into the Democratic National Headquarters and steal secrets and bug their telephones so he could keep his eyes or ears on his political enemies. He was going to win re-election anyway, so it was a very foolish move. And the burglars got caught. And to keep them from talking, he had to raise hush money. Nixon was told that the burglars were going to need at least $1 million for openers. This is according to biographers and his attorney, John Dean, who wrote a book about it. And then they mentioned how Nixon would anguish about where are we going to get this money? You can actually read some of the transcripts of his Watergate tapes. He bugged himself in his White House in January of 73, and he was anguishing, where are we going to get this money? Over $1 million. He was really upset. And then you can read his response just a few weeks after the Gleason encounter, where he said, oh, that's not a problem. We can get our hands on that. I know where we've got that. Now, Jackie Gleason for many years had offered $50,000 to anyone who would show him the hard proof of extraterrestrial visitation to Earth. And over the years, he pumped that up to $500,000. And by the early 70s, he made it $1 million. Jackie was retired. He was swamped with money from the residuals of his honeymooners and TV show, all of his movies. He put record album out and he would appear on other television shows. He made a fortune. And at some point, he would make $14 million per year, an enormous sum in the 60s and 70s, and far more than that in today's money. So a $1 million offer wasn't much to Jackie. He didn't mind. He wanted that hard proof. Jackie and Nixon shared a lawyer named Herb Kalmbach. Herb Kalmbach was arrested and prosecuted for sending out large bundles of cash to the Watergate burglars and their families and lawyers to keep their mouths shut. So now we can put two and two together and figure out why Nixon would possibly take a man with no national security clearances into a top security airbase to show him these classified secrets. He needed the money. Nixon was desperate for money, and Gleason was offering $1 million. Now, I don't have the hard proof of a document. I'm sure they did not write anything down. It was just a matter of either writing a check, but more likely arranging a cash transfer to someone like Herb Kalmbach, who would go around and hand out the money. So you can put two and two together and see how this story really did come together. On a Monday night, where Jackie was hosting his golf tournament, the Inverary Golf Classic, where he invited all kinds of celebrities, including astronaut Gordon Cooper, who was a fellow Freemason like Jackie, and a big, big fan of UFOs. And if anyone possibly went along or at least knew about the Eisenhower-Nixon encounter, I bet it would be Gordon Cooper, who was also on friendly terms with Nixon. So that afternoon, they played golf, and Nixon flew into Jackie's golf tournament. On live national television on CBS, Nixon came down in his Marine One helicopter on the golf course, which had its own helipad. And he and Jackie palled around in a golf cart, and then Nixon got out and spoke to the press and talked about the Vietnam War coming to a close, and how Jackie was doing good work and raising money for charity at his golf tournament, which Nixon would contribute to. And then Jackie got in his golf cart and drove Nixon back to the helicopter, and they took off. So it proves that Nixon knew how to get to Jackie's house, because Jackie lived right there on the 18th green. It was right behind Jackie's home, this helipad. So they had the coordinates, and they pulled it off during the day. I can easily see Nixon sending his pilot back to that chopper pad right behind Jackie's house and having Gleason called up and said, walk out to that chopper pad, get in the helicopter. I want to show you something. So that would have taken about 20, 25 minutes to fly him to Homestead Air Force Base, which is likely where Nixon was in person waiting for him. Although it's possible Nixon took Marine One, his helicopter for the president, over to Jackie's house in the darkness of night and picked him up in person, and together they flew to Homestead. Mr. Nixon had a chopper pad right behind his house in Key Biscayne. It's a big concrete thing that was floating on like foam, and he used it quite often to shuttle to and from Homestead Air Force Base. So you can see, again, this is a very plausible story that could have come together within like 20, 25 minutes for both men to go to the airbase after 8:30 that night. Jackie's wife, Beverly, said he came home that night near midnight, all shook up. And that's when he told the story of what he saw. Now, in her article, Beverly Gleason said that Jackie came home ashen and looking haggard and all emotional, very shook up by what he had seen. And she was so aghast at his appearance and the, you know, quavering voice, I'm sure. She said, where have you been? What's going on? And Mr. Gleason blurted out the truth. He said, Nixon took me to the Air Force Base and showed me the proof at last. He said, we were met by an armed guard unit, protection, that he and Nixon were escorted across the base to a rather isolated area, to a building. And there was an armed guard in front of that building. And they stepped aside when the commander-in-chief was there and let he and Jackie into this kind of morgue or medical examination room. Jackie said, once we were there were four examining tables with four aliens, all of them appearing to be about 2, 2.5 feet tall, not very tall at all, really, dwarfish-like, with pointy ears and big bug eyes. I don't believe Beverly said what Jackie described as the color of their skin. She just said that Jackie was serious and said they were laid out on these tables and they appeared to have been given an embalming or were being ready to be embalmed, that perhaps they had been in an accident near here. Now, that may be supposing things on Jackie's part, no telling where these bodies came from. They were four dead identical creatures from another world. It was very clear they were aliens, and he got his proof at last. He had been craving this for decades, and Nixon took him up on it. And another factor is just in a week or so, it was Jackie Gleason's birthday. What do you get for the man who has everything except this one huge craving for extraterrestrial evidence? He wants to see it real bad. So I think Nixon took him up on it, took his money, and gave him one heck of a birthday present about a week in advance. And they looked over the bodies, probably not touching them, but as close as Jackie wanted and for as long as he cared to in that kind of morgue. And it was probably something that really shook Jackie up, despite the fact that he was very obsessed, really, with extraterrestrials. And we'll get to that in a minute. He came home very haggard and very shook up. And another factor is there's a source who wrote into a website on this story and said that I happen to know that Jackie was escorted from there by Nixon to an Air Force Base hangar at Homestead. They went into the hangar, which you can see from the highway, according to this source. And there was an extraterrestrial craft, your typical silver round disc, and it was kind of what you would call activated or alive. It was hovering up off the floor and being held down by cables. And Jackie was allowed to look at this as he pleased. So he may have, this story may be true, don't know, but it fits with what Jackie's reaction was afterwards. That he got a real show for his money. He got his money's worth. And so at one point after the tour was over, Nixon swore Jackie to secrecy, which he took seriously, except later that night when he blurted out the truth when he got home. Beverly said he came home close to midnight and collapsed into an armchair in the living room and was so upset that he just blurted this story out. And she said, he was so upset that for days and days, if not weeks, he would thunder about how the government's hiding the truth from the American people. And he was so angry that I know they've got the evidence. I've seen the evidence and they won't show it to anyone else. And then his mood would swing the opposite way. He was all giddy with excitement, said Beverly, that he got to see this exclusive classified secret himself above all other American citizens. And he was just so excited. I finally got the proof at last. And then he would swing back the other way. The darn government, they made fun of people who have UFO stories or sightings or claim that we've had crash landings. He was furious that he had to keep his mouth shut and not reveal this, that there have been crashes and recoveries. And we've got the bodies of different aliens. At least a couple, you know, the Roswell would be one case, Cape Girardeau, Missouri, 1941, my hometown, had big-headed gray aliens about 3 to 4 feet tall at most. The Eisenhower encounter aliens were very human-like with only subtle differences, as if they were cousins of human beings. And so here this is this case of these dwarfish aliens that Jackie saw, which just happened to match the 1955 Hopkinsville, Kentucky incident, if you've ever heard of that one, the Sutton family out there in the rural part of the Kentucky countryside were feeling under assault from these dwarfish little 2.5 foot tall aliens with big pointy ears, they said, and these creepy bug eyes. So that's what Jackie said he saw. I don't know if it was the same exact race, but it sure as heck sounds like it. And Jackie was so upset, he did not work in TV for many months. He did a bare minimum later in the year in 1973, and he didn't appear in another movie for years to come. His big comeback movie was Smokey and the Bandit, and it was a huge success, and it revived his career. He did almost no movie work from the time of the incident until then. He did not do any more of his record albums, no more symphonies from Jackie Gleason and his orchestra. So his wife said he had trouble working and trouble sleeping. And, you know, for Jackie, he did drink and smoke a good deal. He had a cast iron stomach. He knew how to pack it away, but he was almost never horrifyingly sloppy drunk. He did not get abusive, apparently. He knew how to handle his alcohol, but I think this incident may have caused him to drink more. He died in 1987 of cancer, diabetes, and other health problems. I wish that he had made a video or signed a statement to release after his death. It has not appeared. It does not look as though he did release something to talk about this. I think he took the secret of that night to his grave, and that we should thank Beverly Gleason for having exposed it and come up with this amazing story that I feel is true.
Do you know what the genesis of Jackie's interest in UFOs and aliens was? Did he have experience or sightings of his own?
He gave an interview in the 50s saying he'd never seen one, but admitted he was utterly fascinated by that subject. Now, in the Eisenhower encounter of 1954, Jackie suddenly, in the weeks and months after this event that was supposed to be a big secret, but eventually it started to slip out through a broadcaster, Frank Edwards, at the time in 54, Jackie used to call up authors and investigators and ask them, what's the latest news on UFOs? And then he would call up UFO sighters or experiencers and get every last detail, even back in 54. Well, suddenly Jackie had this desire in 54 to build his own UFO house out in the countryside outside of New York City where he lived. So Jackie financed, to probably cost him at least $1 million, for this special round house, which opened, finished in 1959. And apparently one of his first guests was Richard Nixon, who was vice president at the time. It was shaped like a UFO with this big silver circular roof. From the air, it looked like not only a mothership, but was surrounded by smaller round buildings in Peekskill, New York. Apparently, Jackie had a round garage with a silver roof, and it looked like a spaceship, too. He called that the scout ship, and he called the main house the mothership. That's how obsessed with this subject he was. So it's almost as if Jackie was told or learned something about the Eisenhower encounter. And I found through research that President Eisenhower had a national security advisor named Everett Gleason. Gleason from Brooklyn, born a few years before Jackie. Now, I can't say for sure that they were relatives, but if anyone were to slip him some details, it would be Everett Gleason on the sly, maybe telling him a few things. According to presidential records, Everett Gleason met with Eisenhower just before his trip to Palm Springs and Edwards Air Force Base in 54, and then just after he got back. So it's a very interesting level of detail there. Maybe a coincidence, but I don't think so. So after the 73 Jackie Gleason encounter with aliens with Nixon, there may have been another celebrity involved. Bob Hope was Jackie's golf partner that very afternoon, a big Nixon supporter and extremely wealthy. I'm suspicious that Bob Hope was also taken to that Air Force base that night. I can't prove it. Obviously, he and Jackie and Nixon are long gone. But what did Bob Hope do in the weeks and months after February 19th, 1973? He designed, custom designed, just like Jackie did, his own UFO house. And he had it built in Palm Springs, California. And you can still see it to this day. It's this round circular house. It's got a few circular buildings around it. It's like he got bit by the spaceship fever just like Jackie did. Both men found that their homes, these special houses, were essentially useless. They were good for parties, and that's about it. They didn't make really good homes. I feel that Jackie built his specifically out in Peekskill, New York, because it was near the edge of a bluff where he could look out and pretend like from his big bay windows in his UFO house that he was riding in a spaceship. But he also stocked the house with a telescope and telescopes. Those are special devices for studying the stars and what may be up there. And according to a magazine description, he also put in a Tesla coil, which is what inventor Nikola Tesla used in the late 1890s to try, apparently, to contact extraterrestrials. Jackie just happened to get his hands on that, and he stocked his UFO house with it, whether it was activated or not. It just goes to show you the level of obsession he had. He collected every book and magazine article he could get his hands on, coming up with a total of 1,700 books and periodicals when he passed away. They were donated to the University of Miami, and they can be found to this day in a special reading room there. You can see Jackie's books, heavy on UFOs, obviously, or the paranormal. And it just, again, over and over, we see the level of obsession he had with finding out the truth in everything. He was used to being catered to and spoiled, if you want to call it that. CBS gave him the longest stretch limo in New York City. He always took a limo everywhere he went. He didn't drive. He was a terrible driver. So we can see how a helicopter would have been arranged for him to go on that trip and take him home. Everything fits together pretty nicely. Obviously, we all want more hard proof, let's say a leaked file or something, photographs, film footage. I just don't think we're ever going to see that. The government probably squelched that long ago. And Beverly has told all that she knows. She gave an interview in 2003, her last one. She never did write a tell-all book, but she stuck with the Gleason story entirely, never retracted it or changed it. She never embellished it to make herself sound like the big hero. She just stuck to the facts and said, this is what happened, that Jackie was dead serious and very emotional about this incident. So again, I feel like the circumstantial evidence and the facts all add up to a true story.
Well, there is some circumstantial evidence. Well, a couple of points, and you pointed out some in your research, excuse me. I've had William English on the show, and William was working at RAF Chicksands at an NSA facility, and his job was to evaluate reports that came onto his desk, grade them for validity, for accuracy, and for reliability. And on one fateful day, a bundle was dropped into his inbox, and it was the Project Blue Book Grudge 13 report, which somehow or other wound up on his desk, probably by accident. And aside from having his life turned upside down, which was a big part of that whole issue with William, because he wasn't clear for the information, he did what he was supposed to do. He read it, he evaluated it, and he graded its reliability. In that report was a document that stated that there were a number of military bases and facilities where alien craft had been stored, and Homestead Air Force Base was listed as one of the bases where an alien craft or two had been stored.
Yeah, bingo.
Yeah, and what's interesting also, you mentioned the plumbers and that whole psychodrama involving the Watergate break-in. You know, what's interesting was some of those plumbers began making not-so-veiled threats while they were in jail, saying that if they didn't get the hush money, they would spill right. everything they knew, including the John F. Kennedy assassination, which Nixon obliquely referred to in the Watergate tapes as that Bay of Pigs thing. It was kind of a euphemism. Yeah. And another thing that people have to understand also is Richard Nixon was a big-time intelligence insider within the establishment long before he became vice president, actually, but especially when he was a vice president, he had access to a lot of information. So it comes as no surprise that being taken under Eisenhower's wing and being a close colleague of his, he would be inducted into this level of information.
Right. Eisenhower knew as his presidency went along that the next man up would be Nixon as the standard bearer of the party, as the presidential nominee, and he was in 1960. So it was very likely that by midway through their 8-year run, Nixon was told just about everything. They had to get him up to speed, especially as they got closer to the presidential nominating process in 1960. But you're correct also when you say the Watergate burglars wanted that money, and they had a lot of knowledge that they could have spilled on Nixon. Douglas Caddy was their attorney. He wrote the foreword to my Nixon-Gleason book and said that when speaking to E. Howard Hunt, one of the Watergate burglars, Hunt told him one of the biggest secrets of all is the fact that we're being visited, that America had the proof, you know, behind the scenes, and that it was not something that Nixon wanted spilled. So
E. Howard Hunt said that. Corner. E. Howard Hunt said, wow, I didn't know that.
Right. Yeah. You'll read the book. Mr. Hunt told Douglas Caddy that was one of the big secrets America had that he knew about, and Nixon and the government did not want to spill. Now, when you want someone to pay all your medical bills and you're caught like a rat in a trap, you better use everything you've got to get yourself out of that trap and have somebody pay for your lawyers and your family's upkeep when you're in jail. So Nixon was in a real anguished state in January of 73. Where do we get the money to hush these guys up? And then suddenly he got the money and they remained pretty much quiet. So it was a mess at the time, and it just grew worse and worse. For those who are not familiar with the Nixon administration, for the next year and a half, it dragged on. More and more revelations of illegal conduct by Nixon and his men. And Nixon was facing impeachment in August of 1974. Mr. Nixon resigned rather than face the disgrace of impeachment. So Nixon kind of went away for many years, didn't give many interviews or say much. And then he began a process of trying to rehab his integrity, his standing in American history, with a series of books. And then he passed away in the mid-1990s. He also did not give us a clue on the extraterrestrial issue, which all presidents effectively kept their mouths shut, including Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon. If presidents after those four in particular were well-informed, they never really spilled too much either. Ford, Carter, Reagan, I think they were all interested in that subject. Supposedly they were briefed and never mentioned what we've got, but hopefully these government hearings coming up soon will start to spill the beans with whistleblowers who were insiders in our government and will tell what they know, what's going on in televised hearings that the world will be able to tune in and watch.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Ford was a Michigan congressman at the time of the Michigan's mass sightings, which the Air Force explained away as swamp gas. And, of course, Jimmy Carter was a nuclear engineer from the Navy. And then one of his campaign promises was he was going to release what he knew once he became president about UFOs and aliens, but of course that never came to pass once he became elected.
Right. He had his own UFO sighting with a group of men from, I believe, a Lions Club in Leary, Georgia. Originally, people thought that was October of 69, but I think an investigator named Kevin Randall did a pretty good job of establishing that would have been January of 1969, maybe just before Nixon took office. But Carter took it quite seriously, was quite sure that this was otherworldly at the time, and filled out in 1974 a UFO report on what he saw 5 years earlier. And when he ran for president in 1976, he said, I don't laugh at people who say they've seen UFOs because I've seen one too. And if I get to be president, I'll make every scrap of information public, so we'll get to the bottom of this. And he did make it to the presidency, and he was briefed and clammed up. He refuses to speak about it. I think in the years after his presidency, he claims, well, I don't know what it was that I saw. He's kind of backtracking. He knows better that it changed colors and it changed position in the sky. It was not a rocket or a meteor or something like that. It moved around. But somebody got to Carter within, I guess, national security or NASA itself and asked, you know, put the brakes on this. We feel the public's not ready for it. And that could be the way a lot of people in government right now feel that we still are to this day. Maybe not ready for it. Well, we certainly are more so than in the 50s and Eisenhower's time. And in the 1970s, there have been all kinds of sitcoms and movies, comic books, documentaries, home videos and everything. We're much more braced up for this mentally, psychologically, emotionally. It's not going to be that big of a deal. And in fact, a couple of years ago, there were revelations and the government admitted grudgingly a few things about these Navy videos and such that we can't explain. And they're unidentified flying around. And that didn't really make much of a ripple in our popular culture. And in our news, it was probably handled so well that we're the majority of the American public, at least, is probably like, yeah, we already knew this kind of stuff. You're telling us something we already know. We're being observed, monitored by different races.
There has been a gradual incremental release of the information decades now to gradually acclimate the public to the reality of this. So there seems to have been a push-pull dynamic within the government and the military-industrial complex where some elements seem to want to get at least some of the information out, and
right.
Other elements were adamantly opposed to any leakage and wanted to maintain a lid on it. And you could see that from the crash retrieval back engineering aspect, and you're the man to talk to about Mo 41, Cape St. Girardeau, 1941, at least as far as then, they had alien technology in their hot little hands. Also, you mentioned Reagan earlier. According to, I think it was his private pilot or somebody, when Reagan was governor of California on one of his frequent plane rides, they observed the UFO, and supposedly Reagan asked the pilot to go follow it, right? I don't know if the pilot did or not, but this was a scenario that his son, Ronald Reagan Jr., vehemently denied later on TV, but it gained wide currency in the UFO field. Well, we reached the end of the fascinating first segment with our guest, Paul Blake Smith. Paul, can you tell our viewers and listeners how they can find your work and find your information?
The best way is to go to Amazon.com, where you'll find all of my books. You could go to argusbooks.com for my first five or six books. And we're fixing up a new Mo 41 book that will come out later this fall from there. If you want to contact me with some serious information or leads you may have, I can be found on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and a couple of others at Pinterest and such. So I'm always willing to chat or at least exchange messages with people who have something relevant, something that they've learned or something they want me to see, to click on, you know. And I'm putting together information on Ronald Reagan to see if I can make this like a trilogy from Eisenhower to Nixon to Reagan. We'll see how that comes about.
And as far as the Cosmic Switchboard is concerned, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com. Sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.